Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie.
I want to bring you one message and make sure I don't forget it, because this is quite a day for one of the veterans of the local political scene. Because today, I got a lovely email in from his family to say our dad, Shamey Moore, at 82 years of age, will be elected as Mayor of Naas today, Tuesday, for the fifth, now remember, the fifth time in his political career, spanning 30 years as an independent councillor. We are all very proud of him. He's an inspiration to us all, from his loving family, David, Declan, Dermot, Dara, and his daughter, Jackie. And that email came in from David Moore. So, Shamey Moore, what an incredible career. 82 years of age, she's becoming Mayor of Naas. It just shows, lads, age doesn't matter. If you're young enough, mentally, psychologically and everything, and Shamey certainly is, and of course, we're not forgetting, he lost his wife in the last year or so as well, but he carries on. So congratulations, Shamey, and probably we'll have him on the programme tomorrow on, I imagine. In regards to that. Anyway, let's say good morning to James Lawless, Kildare North TD, Fianna Fáil TD. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Clem. Can I just throw in a congratulations to Councillor Shamey Moore? When I came onto the council and first got into local politics around 2009, Shamey was a great mentor to me, I have to say, and was a great man to show me the ropes, and has an encyclopedic knowledge of Naas Town and environs. I'm delighted to see he's going to be mayor in the near future again, and he's got a great service of distinction, and long may it continue.
Well said, James. For the fifth time, I think that's a national record, actually.
And we're talking about.
Now, James, of course, the Dying with Dignity Bill, and what you want to talk to us about, is being reviewed by the Oireachtas Committee on Justice today. You're chairman of that committee, aren't you?
That's right. So with the Dying with Dignity Bill is a bill, I suppose, ultimately about euthanasia, or assisted suicide, sometimes it's called. And it's a very serious issue, obviously. It's a very profound issue. Really ask those fundamental questions about how do we all want to end our lives or finish our lives? Is there a point when suffering becomes too much? Is there a point where medical intervention is no longer appropriate? And should people be allowed to make that decision themselves? Now, we had a debate on this in the Dáil before Christmas, and the result of that, I suppose, there was two options on the table. One was to refer these issues to a special committee, sort of a citizens' assembly type consideration, and the second option was to go ahead with the bill as drafted by Deputy Gino Kenny, that was before the House at the time. Now, the Dáil voted to send the bill forward, and the bill came to my committee. I voted for both options, actually. I voted initially for the Citizens' Assembly. I thought that would be the best way to go. But given that wasn't supported by a majority, I voted for the bill to continue because I thought it deserved to get an outing and a hearing.
But now, there are major... You're a barrister by profession, James.
Yes.
It's important that we bring that into the mix. And there's a range of concerns, we understand, have been raised about the bill, including that parts of the bill would be vulnerable. You've just mentioned it to a constitutional change, as there were what's called an over-delegation of ministerial power, which case law had found to be incompatible with the constitution.
That's quite right, yeah. So the bill, so what we're doing today, we've had a number of meetings on it already, and we invited submissions at the start of the year. We had over 1,500 submissions from minister parties and stakeholders. We then asked the Oireachtas legal team to look at it, as we would do with any private member's bill, and they're reporting to us formally today, 3:30 today, on what they have found. But there are, unfortunately, a number of problems with the bill as drafted. There is constitutional issues. There is an issue with confusion between the roles of the minister and the roles of the lawmakers. There is an issue with parts of the bill being copied and pasted, basically, in from other bills. And I suppose, really, look, I don't want to preempt the decision of the committee. We'll decide that over the next couple of days. But there are significant concerns with the bill as drafted. And I should stress that it doesn't mean that the issue is not important. It doesn't mean that the issue does not need consideration, and that a way even should be found to do this. But it does suggest that the bill that's currently before us may not be the appropriate vehicle to do that.
Well, in that case, James, Gino Kenny has said, he's quoted as saying he'd be happy for the government to take the issue on and produce its own bill, and I quote, as long as the substantial issue is legislated for.
Absolutely. I think that may be the way forward. I'm conscious as chair, I don't want to be kind of too heavy on either side, but I do have my own views, and I would be very concerned about the legality of the current bill. But I do think it makes sense, as I did support the idea in the Dáil that this should progress. If this current vehicle is not the right one, if it's not roadworthy as such, to extend the analogy, we might need to get another vehicle. But if we do need to do that, certainly I'd be keen to keep it before the committee. It might have to go a couple of rounds to come back around again. But I think it's a very important issue that we do. Other countries have legislated for it. Now, I suppose one thing that would stand out as well, New Zealand have done this. We took a look at their bill, their equivalent bill, and ran to 241 pages. The Gina Kenny bill, I think, is about 5 pages. So you can see straight away, you know, the checks and safeguards, the constitutional frameworks need to be put into it. So I suppose, put simply, at this stage, I think it probably needs a bit more work, or maybe even a lot more work. But I think it's an important, profound issue that I think we certainly need to tackle.
It's certainly a profound issue, and one that has caused huge controversy over the years. I mean, we have a scenario where people head off to is it Switzerland in terms of the Dignitas. The Dignitas clinic, and you know, it's another case really of Ireland exporting. One of our issues, as we've done with abortion services in the past, you know, we didn't provide it here, but we didn't stop people going. We don't provide this provision here. And was it Marie Cullen over in Wicklow? That was the big case that made the headlines here. Where she was appealing her quality of life, James, and you're well aware of these particular topics. Where do you stand on all of this?
Well, look, I suppose I would be what they call a liberal. As I say, in the Dáil vote to the government proposal was the Citizens' Assembly. I did vote for that, but when that failed, it was a straight choice between should the bill go ahead or not. I voted that it should go ahead. It was actually a free vote. The parties didn't oppose the whip, and I voted for it to proceed. Now, as it happens, this particular bill doesn't seem fit for purpose, but I think that certainly another bit should be found. Look, I think it's something... I think people deserve to have that choice. I do think, though, that there do need to be safeguards. I suppose the concern from a number of medical organisations and end-of-life associations is that if the culture was to change to an extent that maybe people didn't value end-of-life, or maybe there was pressure on people, or people were almost expected to take a certain course, that would be something none of us would want to see. So it is important that safeguards are in place, that independent medical teams would perform assessments, and that there would be absolutely no pressure or expectation on anybody, you know, to take
it. I wonder, James, and I'm only the layperson in regards to this, you're the professional in law in this. I wonder if those concerns whereby the decisions, rather than being left to families or rather than being left to medical professionals to make an assessment, if every one of us who might envisage a time when, look, if our quality of life was gone so low and so bad and the pain was so overwhelming that please let me die with dignity, as Marie Cullen wanted to do, as I understand it, maybe a way around it would, and that would give clarity, if we all expressed that in some sort of formal document and then took the decisions and the concerns that you're talking about into account.
Absolutely, and they talk about a living will and that sort of idea. And actually, there is provision for that in what we're looking at. It's a sort of a proposal where somebody has to be able to give capacity or give consent, and that would have to be, I suppose, witnessed by two doctors to make sure the person is of sound mind when they do that. I suppose there is a difficulty there that if somebody, you could be of sound mind today, you may not be of sound mind next year, and you could see a road ahead of you, but while you still have that capacity to make that choice and have it in your will or have it in your living will, that is very much something that's on the table, and I think that it's actually a very sensible route and allows people to take control of themselves. And I think it's a cultural change as well. I think that I think it will never be the norm, but I think for those exceptional cases where really an intervention is required, and the other thing I often think about as well, some of the, I suppose, opponents to this, and look, I respect for everybody in this debate, but you know, perhaps some of the church based organisations that come forward and they talk about natural life, natural death, I don't think that it is actually natural death. If you're propped up by tubes and tablets and on a machine for maybe a year or more beyond your natural life, when these kind of concepts were formed in the, you know, 2,000 years ago, at the time of Christ and even earlier, we didn't have that kind of medicine and that kind of technology. So I would sort of say, if you take a very strict natural life, natural death path, actually what people are doing by keeping people alive artificially is actually not natural death.
Yeah, and I have to say that over years, there are a number of years, I was visiting a nursing home every weekend, basically visiting in-laws and whatever else who were in it. And I was struck so often by a number of people over the years who were basically being kept alive by medical interventions, and you just wondered, you know, is this what that person would want? Who wants to be left in that vegetative state that's been in? But then it's very emotive. I'm not pronouncing on it, certainly I'm not. The opinions are wide. I'm with you, James, on the sentiments you have expressed, I have to say there. So that bill will be debated, or the proposed bill is going to be reviewed by the Oireachtas Committee on Justice later today, and the chairperson of that committee is James Lawless. James, before you go, you were prominent on KFM yesterday, you've been prominent on national radio, you were prominent in national Sunday papers, and that your views on Micheál Martin, you're not a supporter by the looks of it.
Well, it's interesting. A local colleague, a member of another party, said to me yesterday, he wouldn't be the first Cadefian of OGD to speak up against the leadership.
Charlie McCreevy is perking up now. Go ahead,
Indeed, maybe we were traditional in the county. But look, I suppose what I've said over the last couple of days, I was asked a question, and I suppose it sparked off a number of interviews. First of all, I don't think this is the right time for Eve, and I won't be signing a motion on confidence. I don't think it's appropriate right now when we have COVID and the pandemic and Brexit and everything that's on top of our heads, and we're only trying to get out of it and then pay for it all. But having said that, I think it would be wrong of me to say everything is right within the party, because the opinion polls have not been good. We didn't have a particularly strong 2020 general election. The by-election was obviously disappointing. And I actually think there's an irony here, because in the government have their heads down doing the job. I actually have no doubt that they are doing their very best and by and large making the right decisions. But they're not selling it to the people. They're not bringing the people with them. They're not actually communicating what's going on, why it's being done. You know, there's votes in the door.
Is Micheál Martin's leadership terminal?
What I was suggesting in the interview yesterday was that he's the right man to lead the country through where we are right now. But when it comes to the next election, 2024, 2025, that's a couple of years away. That will be, I suppose, almost 30 years after.
And who would you like to succeed, Jim O'Callaghan?
Well, I suppose, we'll see who the field is at that time. But I think probably by the time of the next election, it's a couple of years away still, it'll be time for a fresh team. And a fresh team doesn't just mean one person. It means the whole apparatus, the whole team, the whole front bench team, the whole party officials, how we do our business, how we communicate. I do think we've struggled to keep up with the digital age as a party.
James, I've just been informed by my good producer Owen here, who's on top of everything, that you're 4-1 third favourite in the 4-1 third favourite in the betting to become the leader of Fianna Fáil.
Get your money down now.
And seriously, from that perspective, would you have such an ambition?
Look, at the moment, I certainly have.
Come on now, James, jump off the fence.
Look, I think everybody, whoever puts themselves forward for any election, would like to go to the top, of course. But I think realistically, look, if I got a call up for cabinet in the next year or two, I think that would be certainly my current ambition.
Right.
And we'll see where I might go after that.
Well, you have only Jim O'Callaghan and Michael McGrath ahead of you, so that's interesting. You're declaring your intentions. If we put it in the great political terms, are you available to serve the nation should you be so required to step up?
Well, Kildare North first and then the nation. Always available and happy to serve my people whenever I can.
All right, well done, James Lawless. Kildare North, Fianna Fáil TD, third favourite to become the leader of Fianna Fáil, ready to step up and serve the nation, but more importantly for the moment today, regarding chairing that session of the Oireachtas Committee on the Dying with Dignity Bill. So important that is. Thank you indeed, James Lawless, and a very good morning to you. Now, isn't that an interesting bit of news? Fair play. Owen Beattie, you're on the ball there in terms of the latest betting from the bookmakers.
Yeah, always working away here in the background, you know.
Yeah, well done. 4-1 third favourite.
Yeah.
Didn't know that now.
And only, like you said, Michael McGrath and Jim O'Callaghan ahead of him.
Right.
So.
As Michael Caine might say, not a lot of people know that. That's my terrible imitation of Michael. Click in again, thanks.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, isn't it interesting that a man who's a backbencher, and albeit the chairman of the Justice Committee, is third in the betting to succeed to the leadership of Fianna Fáil. Right, 4-1 at the moment anyway, as James said, get your few bob down, but he's available to serve the nation, and sure, all politicians are. Can you wish Tara Gill happy 15th birthday for Mammy and Daddy and little brother James from Killina? Indeed, happy 15th birthday to you, Tara Gill. God, I remember when I was 15. I was a little dote altogether. You know, yeah, lots of freckles and lots of hair, and yeah, 15, and beginning to notice the Collini and stuff like that. Yeah, Lerv, you know, the first. Here, I better stop. Anyway, Clem, Great Britain have left the European Union. Just wondering how they're now still eligible to play in the Euros 2024. But sure, the Euros have nothing to do with the EU. The EU is a political alliance. The UEFA is a footballing union. And not every country in UEFA is in the EU, for example. Sweden is not in the EU. Denmark is not in the EU. Norway is not in the EU. Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, I'm not sure any of those are in the EU either. And you could go on and on. There are other countries. Bulgaria is not in the EU. So, two entirely different organisations in regards to that. And James will support his law library friend Jim O'Callaghan. When these chaps, like the others, lose their seats as Seamus, they just hop back into the forecourts to do their day job. Well, I suppose one of the things about taking up a career in politics, Seamus, in fairness now to politicians, and I have very high regard for them, despite what people might think on this programme, when I get stuck into people, I only get stuck in on your own behalf if I feel questions are not being answered or they're being evasive. But it's a very brave decision to enter politics. First of all, you have to put up with an awful lot of grief from people, particularly these days on social media. But secondly, it's a very precarious occupation because your future and your well-being are at the whims of the electorate. And when you're dumped out, what do you do? It's fine to say, you know, oh, they're grand. Some of them, like James, are, you know, are lawyers and stuff like that. But they're very much in the minority. There are others, and I'm thinking of not very, 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 very far from home. And when you lose your seat in a constituency, it's a case of, well, now, what's going to pay the mortgage and stuff like that? Clem, all the countries you mentioned are members of the EU. Sweden is not in the EU. Don't think so. Norway is not in the EU. Maybe Denmark or whatever else. Owen, will you give me up a list of the 27 EU countries, or now 26 that Britain is gone? But one has got nothing to do with the other. You can do that in a couple of minutes, Owen, because I know you've got a special guest on the phone now.
Yeah, it's Fianna Fáil councillor Dara Fitzpatrick on the claim, Maynooth MD. Dara, good morning. Welcome to the programme.
Good morning, and thanks, Sam, for the nice comments.
you're very welcome, Dara.
Thank you very much.
Come here, by the way. Just sorry, before you start with Owen. 4-1 in the bookies for James Lawless to become the new leader of Fianna Fáil after Jim O'Callaghan and Michael McGrath. Would you be offering odds on that now, Dara, being a Fianna Fáil councillor yourself?
Well, I won't comment because I'm very, very close to James Lawless and he's a very, very good fella. But look it, I think this mightn't be his time, but I think the next time he'll be there, thereabouts.
All right. On that note, Owen, take it away.
Well, Dara, yourself, you took up the position of Las Cathaoirleach on the Clane Maynooth MD at the recent meeting. You'll be assisting Brendan Wise now, who is the Cathaoirleach. So, first of all, congratulations on that. And I suppose, what's the mission statement from yourself and Brendan going forward?
Thanks, Owen. Look, it's great that Brendan Wise and myself can share the chair and vice chair of Clane Maynooth MD. Brendan is a proud Alan Wood man, as I am myself, although living in Robertstown. I've lived in Alan Wood nearly all my life and now living in Robertstown. And it's great that two people from a small rural community in Northwest Kildare can represent the people of Clane Maynooth. And I'm looking forward to working with Brendan as chair. I'm sure my role won't be huge because Brendan will give it absolutely everything, and I just want to wish him well. I know he was nervous last Friday when he was appointed, and I just want to wish him well in his year as chair.
Well said, Dara, and the very best of luck to yourself as well. But looking then at the motions that you brought forward to that recent meeting, first of all, you want the council to examine the junction at Cockbridge in Donore to close one of the arms at the junction from Robertstown. I was actually down there over the weekend, and I can kind of see where you're coming from. It's in the interest of road safety, road user safety, but for just people who might not be aware of the situation there, what exactly are you calling for?
I drive that road very frequently, coming from Robertstown out to the Cockbridge. I mean, you come out from Robertstown to the Cockbridge, you can go right or left, and generally you go right or left and you see no car in one of the junctions, and it's just creating a safety concern around the junction. I spoke to the area engineer and he's in agreement with me on this, and in next year he's going to apply for funding under the law, cost safety funding for 2022, to close off one of the arms. And, like, in fairness, if he closes off one of the arms, whichever one goes, it'll make it a much safer jumper, a much cleaner jumper, so there'll be only one line of traffic coming out the road. And for people that are driving through the Cobb Bridge, it can make it safer as well. So that I think it's needed, and I think it will happen next year.
OK, you want the council to confirm if it has plans to hand over the old machinery yard in Broadford to the local community to develop amenities around the junction?
Yeah, well, people from Broadford will know what I'm talking about. The old machinery yard there was a Kildare County Council yard that was used for years up at that end of the county. It was closed about 3 or 4 years ago, and it's actually just the gate is pulled on it now, and there's nothing going on in behind it. The Broadford Tidy Towns Association is a very active association, and they keep the village and the surrounding environment very well. And they have asked me, would the council be in a position to hand over that to the local community? And I'll be pursuing it over the next couple of months. I think we will get it handed over, and I'm looking forward to, instead of a kind of a grown over piece at that junction there at My Valley, that it would be kept and nice grass and maybe planting and some car parking spaces in it.
Okay, and then finally, Dara, a boundary wall in Derren Turn Cemetery. You want this to be removed? What's this about?
I look at it. If anybody has been, like, I've received numerous correspondence from people up there about the graveyard in Derren Turn. The new graveyard is on the left-hand side as you walk in. The old boundary wall, there's a strip of graves on the left-hand side behind that boundary wall. And just locals feel that if that boundary wall was removed, it would mean the people that are buried in the new cemetery in that particular strip would just form part of the older graveyard. They're isolated outside the boundary wall. I brought out the director of services there, Joe Boland, a couple of weeks ago for a meeting with the parish priest. And he has agreed to have a look at it, and if it doesn't cost too much, he kind of said that he will try and get the boundary wall removed. It might be a solution to the curb situation in the graveyard. I know people still aren't happy about the curbs, but he's reluctant to move on the curbs. But I think in the interest of trying to bring people along, I think he might move from the boundary wall.
All right, great. So Fianna Fáil councillor on the claim, Maynooth Municipal District, Dara Fitzpatrick, thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this morning, Dara, and good morning to you. Clem, I was just taking a look there as well, the 27 members.
I have them here, Owen, and I have to eat my hat now, because a listener who told me, you know, all those countries are members, he says he's right. If you do the members, I'll do the non-members, Owen.
Yeah, well, some of them, in fairness, that you mentioned aren't members, the likes of Norway.
Well, I'll do the non-members in a minute, yeah. You just Sweden is I mentioned Sweden.
Yeah, I have the members here, so I'll go through them. 27 of them: Belgium, yeah. France, Germany.
You left
Italy.
Out Austria, now, did you?
Oh, well, I'm not going in alphabetical order.
Are you not? I have them in alphabetical order here. I'll just go through them on that end first. Austria, Belgium, Bulgaria, Croatia, Cyprus, Czechia. It used to be the Czechoslovakia and the Czech Republic and that. Now Czechia. Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Ireland. Italy, Latvia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Malta. Netherlands, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia, Spain and Sweden. Now, I mentioned, I honestly believed that Sweden was not a member of the EU. And I mentioned a couple of other places as well. I didn't know the Baltic states were all members. I knew they were applying. But Owen, the non-members, I got those in alphabetical order too. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Because some of them are massive places. Go on. I'll give you a little quiz then. Tell me who you think are non-members.
Well, Iceland aren't. Norway aren't. Azerbaijan. There are three off the top of my head that I know definitely aren't. Ukraine. Russia. I'm trying to think now. Portugal. Did you mention Portugal?
Right. Okay. I'm going to look at the non-members which have just left me for a minute. But they are Albania, Andorra, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Georgia, Iceland. These are European countries that are not members of the EU. Now, you mentioned Russia.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about Russia... Russia is not regarded as a European nation. It's regarded as Asia, isn't that right? Because it's far eastern in regards to that. So anyway, we'll get to Switzerland is not part of the EU, of course. I don't know, did I mention that? They're not part of the EU, so that site isn't the most accurate either in regards to what it's telling me or not. But anyway, that clarifies in terms of the difference. Look what happened there. That was all about what's the difference between the EU and the Euros. And to answer again, there are a number of countries who take part in UEFA competitions which are not part of the European Union. And one other question, Owen, to you. Israel is allowed to take part in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
Now, Israel is also a Far Eastern country.
Yes.
Are they also allowed to take part in UEFA competitions?
Yeah, they are. And they are in the European side of things as well. So, like, they would have been in the Euro 2020 qualifiers.
Right. That's more to do with a political decision, because it wouldn't be safe for them to take part in the Middle East competitions or whatever else.
Yeah, there's a couple of countries like that, like even Turkey and Azerbaijan. Like a lot of Azerbaijan, I'm pretty sure, is Asia or Middle
Turkey
East.
Turkey is in the Euros, and it's not a European country as regarded as European country as such, Far East and stuff like that. Anyway, okay. Shannon says he works in the European Union, and to Shakhtar Sfeha Tira San Intasorup, there are 27. I thought there's 26 now because Britain are gone, isn't it, in regards to that. So anyway, let's leave that there for the moment because we've got to take a break.